All right. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting of the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Brian.
Sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989, and that's through God's grace and some work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new, you're in the right place. Even if you don't want to be here, you're in the right place. What I'm grateful for is on a good day, I can pray and go to meetings, call my sponsor, work with others, service work. On bad days, I can pray and go to meetings, service work, pray, call my sponsor. So no matter what, I don't have to drink today. What it was is I thought life just sucked. But what really happened is I didn't know how to quit drinking, and I was the one that sucked in life. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the life that I have always dreamed of. Yes, there's bumps in the roads, but you know what? You don't drink. And if you're new, do the action. Action, action, action. Trust God, clean house, help others. And it works. So I am grateful to be sober today. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are turned off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And to introduce the speaker, what's great about this month's speakers, all of them are people that are in the solution. And what the great thing is I've watched them through the years trudge the road to happiness. And they're in here on good days, they're in here on bad days. And she's one that works with the women all the time. You always see in here, you always see with her hand out, and always working with the women. To me, that's action. That's the solution. Always looking out for the newcomer. And she has a great story. So please give a warm welcome to Beth.
Yay. I'm Beth and I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
Actually, I'm Beth Nash and I'm an alcoholic.
My
sobriety date's May 12th of 1997, and my home group is the College Park Triangle Group, which meets on Thursday nights. And I see some of my home group members here, which is kind of cool. And I see a lot of people that I know. And, you know, there was a time that I didn't know a lot of people. I had a few drinking buddies, but that was the extent of my life. And, you know, I look around this room and I see, like, tons of people that I know, and it's, like, pretty exciting. What I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about my family life. I had an alcoholic mother and an alcoholic father, but growing up, I didn't know that that's what the issue was. I knew that when my dad built a house, he put a bar in the living room, and every day he would come home and he would go to the bar. He spent a lot of time at the country club playing cards, and I now know he was at the country club drinking. But my dad, he eventually, when he passed away, he died sober, which is kind of cool. I have an older brother and a younger sister and a younger half-sister. My parents, yeah, Mary, I neglected to tell her about my half-sister. I don't know how that happened. But my parents divorced when I was young. I was in, elementary school, and I moved to Texas with my mother and my stepfather. And my stepfather was the preacher at our church, and he counseled my parents. They went to marriage counseling at the church, and he was the one who counseled them. And so, needless to say, I had a few resentments with religion and church and God and all of that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I have since gotten rid of those, and I'll tell you about that. But so I moved to Texas, and my mother and my stepfather, both raging alcoholics. He was a mean drunk, and I don't recall a whole lot of my mother's drinking, but I don't recall a whole lot of my mother. She wasn't around very much. They both worked, and, you know, I don't have those memories of, like, this really loving, nurturing childhood. in high school, I would go to my summers and live with my visit my dad and his new wife. And right before high school, I moved back to Florida, which is Bradenton, Florida, and went to high school back in Bradenton. And I kind of hooked up with some old friends that I knew when I was little. And, you know, I had a pretty good childhood. You know, we had all the stuff. We had that house on the water and the boat and the, you know, the beaches. And, you know, I had all that outside stuff. But my dad was also a mean alcoholic, and he screamed and yelled and threatened, and, you know, he threw things. And my stepmother was an enabler. She when my dad would throw chairs through windows, she would close the curtains so nobody would know. Like we didn't know. hold on. So I didn't drink until I went to college. And my dad said, you know, you can live here so long as you abide by my rules, and if you don't abide by my rules, I'm going to send you back to your mother. And, you know, that was the last place I wanted to go, was back to my mother and my stepfather. My older brother stayed with my dad, and my younger sister stayed with my mom and the half-sister. And I was kind of like the in-between. I was the middle child and not really sure, you know, where do I go? What do I do? So I've heard other people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about the not feeling like you're a part of anything. And I had that feeling even before, as a little kid, you know. And I don't know where that came from. There's somebody's face in the window over there. That's kind of spooky. it was a scary face, too. I don't know who it is. you know, I went away to college, and my drinking started. You know, I didn't know about alcoholism and about what alcohol did. I just started drinking, and from the beginning, I drank differently than everyone I knew. You know, I dated a guy who drank like a fish. I don't know whether he was an alcoholic or not, but he had blackouts, and he was real strong, and he would, I don't know if you know, college dorms, you know, they have these industrial bathrooms, and he ripped a sink off the wall. And he hit me once, and my roommate at the time, her boyfriend came in and took care of that. But, you know, he doesn't remember that. But I didn't have blackouts then. I thought it was fun. I was having a lot of fun. I remember a few times I joined a sorority, and I'm embarrassed saying that, only because, you know, the morals, the woman who's in charge of morals, you know, the ethics, that kind of thing, she had chats with me on a number of occasions. But I would watch women, you know, get picked up there at the sorority house going out on dates. You couldn't drink on college property, so I was across, there were a few of us, we were across the street with a cooler, and we were drinking, watching all these guys come pick girls up for dates. And, you know, nothing about that's normal, you know, sitting across the street drinking. But, you know, it was fun. I had a great time. And I moved to Orlando in 82 and really started drinking. A girlfriend of mine that I knew from growing up, she went to school in Gainesville and had the summer off, and she came to live with me. And she drank like I did. And her family was very similar to mine. You know, on the outside, everything looked good. But on the inside, she had an alcoholic father. And, you know, so we commiserated together while we're drinking jug wine. We drove to Gainesville once with two big jugs of wine. You know, the screw top kind, the bad kind. The kind that, you know, it just makes you sick. But anyway, you know, it was just normal drinking, I thought. I never got a DUI. I didn't go to treatment. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I got sober. Surprisingly, I didn't get a DUI. I was down in Fort Lauderdale with the company I work for, and this is funny. We're all out at some tiki hut kind of bar and drinking those big pink drinks, and I'm, you know, these are people I work with, and I had this little convertible, and I had some music on and had the top down, and I'm driving back to the hotel, and this guy, one of the guys that was with us was beside me, and I'm like, oh, you want to race? So we go, I go racing off. He saw the policeman behind me. I didn't see the policeman. And I got pulled over, and this was in the 80s, and, you know, it wasn't so bad then. He said, you know, what's going on? And I said, well, yeah, he asked if I'd been drinking. I said, yeah, I had a couple drinks. And he's like, well, you know, I could do one of two things. I could take you to the police station and book you for driving under the influence, or, you know, you can go right back to your hotel and not do this again. And I'm like, well, personally, I prefer to go to the hotel. And he let me go. And so that, you know, that was, I was oblivious. But I drank, I mean, I drove and drank and drove a lot of times with one eye, because, you know, if you're looking, you get two lines, and one eye gives you one line. But, you know, my drinking progressed. Nothing too exciting, nothing to, you know, write home about. But my stepmother, I went to visit her while I was out of college, and I was showing her some of my pictures from college. And I guess at that time, my dad's drinking was getting really bad, and she commented on my pictures, and she said, In every one of them, you have a beer in your hand. And that, to me, seemed normal, but I'm like, well, yeah, we were at a party. And that was just, that was how my life was. So eventually I go out to a bar downtown, and I meet this really nice guy, and we decide to get sober. And I'm just skipping over a few things, but we decide to get sober, and I went to my very first AA meeting at, I think it was May the Beginning, and they talked about God. And I was, of course, hungover and feeling like crap, and you know, I go in, it's a small group, and they're talking about God, and I'm like, and I'm bawling, and I'm like, you know, I don't want anything to do with that, because I still had this idea that this man of God broke my parents apart and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, so, you know, I kept drinking for a while. Then I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober at Dr. Phillips. And I go in, and the very first meeting I went to was a big book meeting. And I didn't know a thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not even, I think my sister said, you know, you are turning into our mother. And my mother committed suicide and while she was drinking. So, you know, when my sister said that, you know, it gave me a kind of one of those, uh-oh. And I didn't want to be like my mother. So I went to an AA meeting, and a lady just ran after me out after the meeting and gave me that Living Sober book. And I read that and wasn't quite ready to get sober. But so the first meeting I went to at Dr. Phillips, I kept hearing people talking about, you know, the steps and the getting a sponsor and coming to meetings all the time. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice. So I came in late and I left early, didn't call anybody, didn't get phone numbers, and I worked the steps off the wall. And I was working on my fourth step by myself. I was like, okay, I'm going to start writing all this stuff down. And you know, in the meantime, I meet this guy, and we take a trip up to New York. And he's like, oh, why don't we get married? And I'm like, oh, okay. So it was really cool, because he owned some land up there, or his family did, and there was this rock island in the middle of this lake, and we got married on that little island and took off on a jet ski. It was really kind of cool. But, you know, I had been in AA for a little bit and had not been drinking probably for 6 months, which was big. And there's not a lot to do up in New York in this area. So, after we got married, we got drunk. And then I came back to Orlando and people saw my ring and they're like, oh, I'm like, oh yeah, I got married. But I did pick up a 1-year chip, but didn't tell anybody that I drank because, I was in another state, nobody knew. And so eventually, we bought a house down in Winter Park and it was beautiful. It was this gorgeous house right off of Park Avenue and, on the outside everything looked great. And the day we closed on it, we went out to dinner that night and I had allegedly been sober. And he said, do you want a glass of wine? And I was like, sure. So, I drank and stayed drinking for a number of months. And I was going to AA meetings all over town where I knew I wouldn't see anybody I know. And, that wasn't working because I was telling people I was sober when I was drinking and, it was that yucky feeling inside and just a miserable place to be. And, if you've been to Alcoholics Anonymous and you go back out drinking and, then I was trying to get sober. I was hoping to get sober. And, eventually I just quit going to the meetings. And finally, I remember my last weekend of drinking. And I knew a little bit about AA. And I told myself I was not going to drink until 7 o'clock that night. This is the last night I drank. I was not going to drink until 7. And at 6, we were all kind of after dinner going to the bar. By 6, I was drinking, and by 7, I'm pretty sure I was in a blackout. I have no idea what I did the rest of the evening. And when I got back to this was out of town. When I got back to Orlando, I called somebody who had actually called me. Somebody had actually missed me, and they called me and said, left a message and said, how are you doing? And so I called this person back, and they said, well, why don't you meet me at a meeting? I'm like, okay. So I went back to that same group and I fessed up that I hadn't been sober and picked up a white chip and actually got a sponsor. And this sponsor, I had seen her when I was in and out of the meetings, and she just had this peacefulness about her. She would sit there and she would laugh, and she had all these girls talking to her, and just this presence about her that I thought, I like that, and I would like to be like that. So I asked her to sponsor me, and we started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I struggled for a long time with the unmanageability. I knew I had a problem with alcohol, but I thought that because I had a job and a house and a car and a husband and dogs and, I thought because I had all of that, like I grew up with, that I had all that, that my life was not unmanageable. And I didn't make the connection until I started working the steps, until I talked to somebody about what my life was like. I was hiding bottles of wine around the house, and it was just me and him, and he drank too. So I don't know why, I also did the whole switching different kinds of drinks. I was a vodka drinker, then I was a wine drinker, and then it was wine without sulfates because sulfates gave me headaches, and it was not the wine, it was the sulfates in it. And, all of these excuses about why I drank the way I did. And, when I started working the steps, a lot of light bulbs went off. I started to understand about alcoholism because I thought that there was really, something was wrong with me. And I do know that something was wrong with me. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned there's a treatment for it. There's a solution to the alcohol problem. But I didn't know that until I actually sat and talked with somebody about it. When I tried to work the steps on my own, you know, you can learn a lot out of the book, but until you talk to somebody else about it, for me, it was not real. So I struggled with that, the step two and step three, and my sponsor at the time said, you know, I said, you know, listen, I have some issues with God and church and religion, and I just don't think that I'm going to be able to do that part. And she said, don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. So I didn't worry about it. And I was going to meetings at a Unity church that was downtown, which no longer exists. They tore the church down a number of years ago. And, you know, I went to a meditation there. And this was probably in my first 6 months of sobriety. And, you know, I went to this meditation and, you know, I was going through a divorce and, you know, I was miserable at my job and life seemed out of control. And I had this, something happened in that meditation. I knew that everything was going to be okay. I didn't feel the wind blowing or the light shining or anything, but I knew inside everything was going to be okay. And that was enough for me to move on with the rest of the steps. So my sponsor said, okay, now you need to start writing down your fourth step. And we did it out of the big book and did the columns and the, who are you mad at and why are you mad at them? And that was pretty easy. But in the meantime, my dad had gotten sober. And I was still, you know, kind of wishy-washy about, am I mad at my dad or not? And he had tried to make amends to me when I was still drinking. And he drove up to Orlando and he made his amends. And I was still so angry, you know. It was all everybody else's fault, all my problems. You know, if my parents hadn't divorced, if this guy hadn't done this, you know, counseled my parents, and, you know, if you had the husband I had, you know, it was just everybody else's fault. And when I started writing down all the names and why I was mad and then what it affected, I started to see that, you know, maybe there were some patterns, which I couldn't, and I didn't see it clearly until I did my fifth step, until I read everything off to her. And she was writing, she's jotting notes down, and I'm like, you know, what? I couldn't figure out what she was doing. And at the end, she's like, okay, now tell me what you see. And I started to tell her what I saw, and I only had a couple little things that were wrong. And she started listing, you know, a lot of things that she saw, and I wrote them all down, all these things, all the character defects. I wrote them on a little piece of paper, and I kept them in my purse, and I would pull them out every now and then. And unfortunately, that purse was stolen out of my car a few years later, but so I've forgotten what my character defects are. but I see that I know what they are. I haven't forgotten them. And if I think I've forgotten them, I have people to remind me. You know, but I was very judgmental. I was very, I started thinking about, I didn't like to go to church because, you know, everybody dressed nice and they came in like a family, and then they would go home and drink and beat their wives and have affairs, and you know, it's very judgmental, I forget the other word. But I when they were pointed out to me, that was when I could start doing something about them. And you know, I did the sixth and seventh step, and I had this list of people for my eighth step. I had this list of people, and I thought, it was suggested that I talk to my sponsor before I go out and start making amends. And, you know, thank goodness I took that advice, because, you know, I wanted to call all those men that I had seen while they were married, and I wasn't, or maybe I was, you know, it probably was. So I wanted to call and let them know I'm doing good, and, you know, and she suggested that maybe it's not a good idea, and, you know, and I was resentful at the wives. Who knows why, because they had him. But, you know, in all reality, I didn't want him either. So I did make amends to my my dad. This is a really cool story. It's probably been 8 years ago. Chet and Mary and I knew, and other people knew, this woman named Benny. And Benny had a lot of medical issues, and she would come to our AA meetings, and she had this light around her, and she got really sick, and she was in the hospital, and Chet and Mary and I went up to see her, and she died while we were there with her, holding her hand. And I didn't know that that's what would happen when my dad passed away, that I think God was letting me see that it was a peaceful thing, that it was not, you know, dying was not a bad thing. It was a peaceful leaving of this earth. And so my dad was really sick. He had a lung disease, and he was bedridden for a couple years. And for those couple years, I got to go down and see him just about every weekend. For 2 years, and I got to take care of him, and I got to drive him around, and I got to make those amends to him. When he died, all of us were there, all the kids were there, and he had remarried again, and to this wonderful woman that I still stay in contact with, who is not an alcoholic, but she put up with my dad. I don't know how, because he was still... Everybody's ornery these days. My grandmother's ornery, too. But, you know, my dad, the healing that took place between he and I was amazing. You know, I'm like, Dad, don't you want me to take you to a meeting? And he's like, no. You know, the book says when two or more alcoholics are together, it's a meeting. And we talked about AA, and we talked about, you know, my life growing up, and he was sorry, and I was sorry, and we got to say all those things, and when he passed away, you know, we were all there holding his hand, and it was not bad, it was good, it was peaceful, and I think the plan was that I could see with Benny what was going to happen with my dad, and, you know, that's something that I would never have been able to experience without Alcoholics Anonymous. I just got back from a trip to see my 92-year-old grandmother, who had been sick and just gotten out of the hospital, and I got to go up and try to help her. And I don't know if any of you have family that are in their 90s. It's a different mindset. She doesn't know I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's no reason to tell her, because, you know, for people of her age, and for a lot of people now, you know, there's a stigma attached to alcoholics, and, you know, there's no reason to burden her with that, because she will never understand. But, you know, I made all kinds of arrangements, and did grocery shopping, and sat with her and talked to her, and, you know, everything I did, as soon as I left, she undid. And I'm like, okay. So I called my brother and my sister, and I'm like, your turn next, because I just did my part. But, you know, I could do that only because I'm sober. Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to be a family member. It's allowed me to be a friend. It's allowed me to be a sister. You know, my sister got married, and she put her dog to sleep, and she had a baby, and I got to go to California and see all of that. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I would have missed out on. had I not been in Alcoholics Anonymous. We tell people, keep coming back, and it's, it works if you work it and all this stuff, but, I didn't believe it until I did it. And that's what I like to tell the women that I work with. It's like you have to experience it yourself. And you can't experience this stuff if you're not sober. There was a guy, his name was Ed Mutum, and he's this big old preacher. He's probably this big, 7 feet tall, and he was a preacher, and he was on Oprah. I think he talked about forgiveness. This mean, horrible stepfather that I had, even this is years into sobriety, he died. But I was still mad at him. I still had this, I couldn't go into I'm an Episcopalian, and I couldn't go into an Episcopal church and smell, there's a smell that Episcopal churches have, and it made me nauseous every time I went in there. And somebody hooked me up with this Ed Mutum, this preacher, and he taught me and told me exactly what to do when it came to forgiving this man, this stepfather. I had to do that. I had to make amends to him, even though he had died. Because I felt bad, and I didn't like that feeling that I get inside. So I did everything he told me to do, and I got to call him when my dad was real sick, and he's like, okay, now this, okay, lay down, and close your eyes, and I did everything he told me. I had to write it down first, but I could follow some direction, and I forgave that man, the man that was so mean and horrible, and it doesn't make my stomach turn when I think about him anymore. The past few years have been really difficult for me physically. I've had 2 back surgeries. I got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and I was telling Chet before the meeting, I got an insulin pump, and I know this is AA, but I got to tell you this. It's like a beeper. It's like that big, and I can't wear any of my clothes because this thing is everywhere. So I stuck it on my bra because it looked funny on my side. But I've had a lot of medical things. But, through all of this, life happens. I've been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've gotten, I do what is suggested. I went away a couple weekends ago to a retreat, and my sponsor suggested that, well, maybe I ought to start calling people. Women, and I'm like, oh, okay. I still have a hard time with picking up the phone and calling somebody, and Mary told me once, it's like I don't if I don't want to go to something, she suggested that maybe find somebody who looks as uncomfortable as you and talk to them, ask them how they're doing. And, that's not stuff that comes naturally to me. What Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us is to give back and to find out how they are and quit thinking about myself. And it's hard for me. I'm like, you've had a tough couple years, Beth. You need a break. and I don't get that. Which is fine, because when I start doing things for other people and thinking about other people, my problems are insignificant. I was thinking about how long I've known Brian. I met Brian with Chet and Mary, and we put on the 2000 convention, the AA convention here in town, and I was like 3 years sober, and we would have meetings like all the time, and there was, you know, like screaming and yelling and fighting, and I watched all these people do this sober, and they, you know, and they didn't drink over it. I mean, there was also really good times too. I won't ever do that again. But what it did is it got me hooked up with Alcoholics Anonymous. It got me in right in the middle of this thing. And ever since then, you know, I've been pretty much in the middle. I can't remember a time like that I've not gone to meetings, a couple meetings a week. I think I did take a trip to California for a week and didn't go to a meeting. But that's what I do. It's part of my life. And because Alcoholics Anonymous is part of my life, I get to have a life. You know, I get to go see my grandmother. You know, I didn't want to go, and there's some people here who will tell you that I didn't want to go, but I went, and, you know, I did it. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. And because it is birthday night, I'm going to end a little early because I'm done.